Ariel is a community of body, mind, and spirit seekers and believers. Ariel Talk Time, hosted by founder and business psychic Victoria Lynn Weston. She shares thought-provoking conversations with lifestyle experts to awaken and enhance your way of living. If you like this interview, please post a review on iTunes or Stitcher.
Welcome back, everyone. My guest is an author, a mentor, and she is also an editor. We're going to talk about the importance of editing, about authors that have a book out there and are trying to pitch a publisher, and whether or not the importance of having a professional editor is going to advance your potential of having your book published by a traditional Random House type of publisher. Margaret Harrell is a 3-time fellow McDowell Colony who has recently been authoring her memoir series, Keep This Quiet. She talks about her relationship with Hunter S. Thompson. You may know him. He is the Gonzo journalist. She's a freelance editor, and she was also the copy editor of Hunter Thompson's Hell's Angels. But in addition to being an extraordinary meditation instructor, you're also an extraordinary writer, and I thought we'd just highlight just a minute on the fact that you wrote this memoir series. What's as fascinating is about it, few people could even get down to writing their own biography, but you came out with a memoir series, and you know they're called Keep This Quiet. It has to do with various relationships with interesting men, such as Gonzo journalist Hunter S. Thompson and Milton's Sklonsky and Jan Menesert and all these other things. So first, you know, tell me, for those of people that don't know who Hunter Thompson is, he was quite an extraordinary individual. And I think you said Brad Pitt was trying to maybe do his film at some point. But he was the editor. He wrote Hell's Angels, and you were the editor for him. Is that correct?
I worked at Random House in those days, and technically I was assistant editor, copy editor. That's a long story because, you know, in those days you almost had no women editors. But also in those days, the whole editing process was much different. You went through from beginning to end. You had an acquisition editor who went out. So I was not the acquisition editor. Acquisition editor who would go out and find the manuscript. And maybe it wasn't completely written, like in Hunter's case, it wasn't written. And the acquisition editor would pull the chapters out and make sure that the writer could finish a complete book. So I would receive it after the manuscript was complete. So that's a stage in editing. It's not the acquisition stage, and it's not the developmental stage. In his case, I received it when it was ready for copy editing and line editing and any final edits that came through. But that's a whole incredible story because I had all his letters to me, and they were like dynamite. They were funny. They were agonized. They were him being him. And I used them with permission in Keep This Quiet 1 and in Keep This Quiet 2.
I know. It's pretty incredible. I just think it's just amazing. For anybody that would like to know more about Margaret's amazing background and her, you know, living in Europe at various places and of course, being a book editor and a writer as well, and you might want to check out Keep This Quiet series, a 4-part memoir series, which I understand you're actually going to be adding a fifth to that. So I think that is yes. Quite a bit interesting. You know, it brings me to being, you know, a woman in business and all that, and you were, like, I think you alluded to the fact that many women were editors in that. So how are you treated as a woman, you know, being an editor? Because obviously you came up the ranks and were highly respected then, and certainly are very respected today as a writer editor. So what did it feel like being in a male-dominated workplace?
Well, you see, the ones who, in my experience, weren't for promoting women into high jobs were the ones in the very top management. But the ones who were like the actual people doing the work themselves, like the senior editors, they were fantastic. They were totally fantastic.
You didn't have to serve coffee or anything or get up and do any of that.
Oh, no. They were saying, please, will you work on this book with me? Oh, no. They were completely sharing different parts of the job together. No, it was absolutely wonderful. And also there was no, you know, like you hear things about all kinds of things on all levels you hear now. I didn't experience any of that. I was treated quite well. And before that, I worked for a syndicated company, United Feature Syndicate. And it syndicated our columns and cartoons like Peanuts and things like that. And it was the same story. The senior man, whom we never ever saw, so I never met him, he didn't want to promote a female, just sight unseen. And I was an assistant editor. The two senior editors wanted me to stay and be promoted, but they could do nothing with whoever it was, the invisible person at the top. So I had to leave because I didn't have enough of a salary to pay my rent. So that's when I went to Random House, but I never had any kind of issue as far as the people I was working with who had the highest work positions. It was just beyond that where I couldn't see them. they had the ones who had the authority to, you know, make promotions and all. They were the ones.
Very interesting. So in your life, and you've accomplished, you know, many, many things, obviously just being a woman editor and a male dominated, you know, career at that time is pretty extraordinary in of itself. But what are the things that you are most proud of?
In my life or just in that?
In your life. I know you got a lot of things to be proud of, but maybe, you know, give us one interesting thing.
In my life, I guess it's a funny answer, and I didn't think about it. I just let it come to me. I wouldn't, so this is probably on a higher level of me speaking. It wouldn't be individual instances. I could get lost telling all the individual things I'm proud of. I kind of say I'm the most proud of becoming me, discovering me, keeping on with it, you know, going through the whole process of trying to keep an open mind about who am I and following events, following questions. That's what the writer in me did. Keeping an interest in, I'm interested in each new project, that kind of thing. I'm proud of, I guess, developing those qualities. That would be, in the end, the kind of the overarching thing.
Because you're an extraordinary writer and you've done extraordinary editing for Random House and other, you know, significant publishers and that, you also think it's important in today's age with all the bloggers out there and all the people that are doing a lot of self-publishing on their own books and that, which is really just a wonderful opportunity for anybody that wants to do that, that you want to show people the importance of getting a good editor and how to take advantage of editing. And so you do also freelance editing, whether that's a blog post, whether that's basic copywriting, whether that's, you know, you're writing a new website and you need somebody to look over the copy on that, as well as you like to be an editor for books and that. So let me ask you this. Why is it important? I mean, I know people like me, especially if you go too fast, you always need an editor because no matter how well you read it, you're always going to read the text version correctly anyway. So oftentimes you're not going to see grammatical errors or even some basic typos in that. So why do you think we need that today? I mean, I know why, but tell me why.
Okay. First, let me say from what you just said, the primary part of my editing experience, years and decades, is freelance editing. So sometimes it was authors whom I had, for instance, at Random House. They would follow me and contact me on their own. And then lots of authors who came to me on their own. Because I love freelance editing. You can set your own working parameter. So why is it important? Let me just give you my own personal example. Well, first I have to back you up because it's only copy editing, which is the final level where you're working on correcting the spelling and all that stuff. Editing begins with, first if all you want is sort of a critique, you get an evaluation. That's prior to editing. If you start with a book and you have a blank page, but you have a wonderful idea and you've cooked it for maybe 10 years, but you just don't have the time, let's say you are like a real busy professional person, to do the actual writing on your own, then you might come to me and say, I want developmental editing. And you say, here's my outline, and I will tell you what I think of the outline and get tips on getting started and what the process will be like. And you go off and you write your first chapter or two and give it to me. and the book will develop from nothing during while I'm working with you. That would be for people mostly who their work is so time consuming they'd never get the book written, and they are a good writer and they have a good book in them, and it's more important to them to hire me and save their time for their work. Like if they're a doctor or something like that. But a good writer with a good book, maybe sure. With a health focus like someone I have now. So that's developmental editing. Then there is what you're talking about, getting down to if all that's done, everything's in place, the structure's okay. In case of a novel, the characters are pretty much established, etc. None of that editing's needed. Then you go to what you're talking about, where you work on the writing. And then an editor can be like a writing coach, giving you assignments, telling you flaws, basic flaws you have, telling you an editor will not necessarily do your job for you. I hope not. I give the author as much to do as possible, as much insight on how to make improvements. But you get finally, after the developmental editing and everything being in place, then you go down to the working on the writing, the line editing, copy editing, and proofreading. But I wanted to give you an example of me myself. In spite of the fact that I'm an editor, I was looking forward to being edited. And so the first Keep This Quiet, there was this wonderful guy, and he said, I'm going to publish the first volume. And he was not only an editor, he was a writer. And he was a creative writing teacher at North Carolina State University, now at the University of Arizona. So, and he loved Hunter Thompson. So everything was perfect. Not only that, because for some crazy reason, he did the editing the same way I used to do it at Random House, where you meet the author. But he would meet me at a coffee shop. And we would sit outside or at Whole Foods, and we would sit outside, and he would be reading the pages, ask me questions. This is unusual, but ask me questions. And I remember two things in particular. Most of it he felt was fine, and he would make a little mark here and there, and I would accept those marks. But two main questions, which were invaluable to me. He got to a point and he said, oh, no, 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 no. And I said, what? He said, you got to have a scene here. It was a memoir. I said, but I don't remember. He said, you can do it. You've got to have a scene. He said, you go home, you put a blank page up there, and you just write the scene. And so I said, okay, I will take his excitement, his energy, his belief in me, and I'll do it. I went home, I took a blank page up there, and I went zzzz, and I just wrote the scene, and it really came out. And I felt it was pretty accurate. I found a way to use what I did remember and make a real scene. And the book needed it desperately. I never forgot that. The second thing, as an editor, he told me was near the end of Keep This Quiet, the first volume. He said, oh, no, 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 we have to cut out the rest of this letter. It was a beautiful letter by Jan Minstar, told like a story. You could read it. Yeah. Well, he cut out all but the first two paragraphs. And he said, look, it's near the end of the book. You cannot turn the focus away from you like this. We have to keep the focus on you for the end. Out this goes. And I agreed with him. So an editor can see something that you can't see. It's not... And that's the real editing. The only at the very end do you get to, after all that's done, to the copy editing. But people need different types of editing. Not everyone needs every type.
Very good. I know. It's sort of new to me. It's like you sort of know, or all of us sort of know on an intuitive level, if you will, about the various aspects of editing and that. So you make it sound very simple. But again, it goes back to today. Let's say people do these blog posts or they're editing and that. You say it's important to have a professional. I noticed on one of these little sections that you emailed, you say that today experts say then rather than experts say that it's good to delete adverbs, and you give the example that rather than saying the girl runs quickly, you should say the girl sprints. I would imagine you'd get rid of the word quickly as well. You just say she sprints. You don't have to say quickly, because sprints in and of itself means quickly, correct?
Correct. Yes. So they're what I call dead words, and many authors, it never occurs to them that you can make words count. Truly, many authors, it never occurs to them like they say, she said. Now, some people want to say she said all the time and forget about all the descriptions. But a word like that can have personality and character and flavor in it. It's a chance to use the word to add information, to add interest. So you can say she walks slowly. Well, I really can't. Can I visualize that? Not very well. She walks slowly. That's generic. So you choose a word, if possible, like a verb. She ambles, she sidles, she glided. Some kind of word that shows how, shows the character, that turns into a picture.
It's a lot like screenwriting, by the way.
It's like screenwriting and more, because more and more people say show, don't tell. Show is like screenwriting. You want to see there. And telling is just giving information, and you have a passive reader. All the reader does is take in the information and not even think, go to sleep, like you said, like a zombie. But you want active information with an active reader. You can say, and you want to say somebody walked in a shifty manner. But so you can use a verb like tiptoed or skulked or sneaked up. It can be noiseless or furtive or evasive. You want it to have scenic appeal so that people began to visualize using their right brain. They began to make their story in their head as they read.
Very good. Now, you say that we need beta readers. What is a beta reader?
Oh, yes. I guess this is kind of new, but now that in the days that a writer takes over and has to do a marketing plan and everything, whether or not you're in traditional publishing or self-publishing, beta readers are people you get to give you feedback. And you hopefully it's not a family member, hopefully it's an objective, hard-reading person who will give you frank feedback. So those are beta readers, and you can have them before you go into editing.
That's a lot to hire a beta reader.
Well, let me go back. It's the equivalent, and you don't want to carry it as far as it is in politics, but it's the equivalent of polling and taking the audience, the measure of the audience. Like in books now, some people will test the title, and some publishers, they will go out and, you know, poll people to see how the value of a title, because a title is so important. But I'm speaking mostly about, you know, like books, where the thing is you invest a lot of money and you don't want to lose all that money. But like for a blog or so on, sure, you get reader comments and things like that. So it's not so important as a, I mean, I wouldn't necessarily use it with
for feedback, right? So for a blog post, you might not need a beta reader and stuff like that.
You might get comments back, and you notice what people are reading and what they aren't reading. You know, you look at Google analytics, and you can get your feedback that way. So you don't need normally. Some people don't have time to write their own blogs. I don't know if you know this, but they go out and hire the blog writer.
Oh, sure. And there's a lot of that. And understandably, you know, a lot of small companies and large companies hire writers to write things based on their company and so on. No, but we're talking about editors, though, and the fact that today, if you have your own small business in that it's good to hire someone like yourself in particular to sort of go back and look at the editing and maybe in your case as well, maybe they can guide them to a better narrative storytelling. As you said, getting rid of some of the dead words in that. Does having an editor automatically mean that if we're looking at publishing in that, let's say I wrote a book, and does it mean if I have an editor that I'll get a traditional publisher? Because now that we're sort of defining the importance of editing and the importance of an editor, it's no longer like as simple as just editing for typos and that, as you defined perfectly about, you know, the development, the storyline, not so much a storyline, but the line editing and copy editing as well. So let's say somebody did write a book and they had a professional editor like yourself. Does that help in getting them published, like with a more established publisher?
Oh, absolutely. It's like almost a criterion these days.
Well, you know, I never knew that, but that's an excellent point then. I had no idea. So.
Oh, yeah, but it doesn't mean that you'll get a publisher necessarily. First of all, you won't get a publisher unless they'll open your manuscript. Your book package, and most of them won't unless they have some kind of clue that they should, you know, like some kind of person recommending you or many companies, they you have to go through an agent. They won't even look at it. They say agent or manuscripts only. So, but even to get the attention of an agent, many people will do things like they will go to, which is advisable, they will go to a writer's conference. And at the writer's conference, there will be talks by editors and publishers, agents, especially agents. So they will meet the agent there, and the agent will say, hey, I like your, they will participate in these quick promotions where they promote their book for like half a minute or a minute with one by one with different agents. And the agents may say, yeah, I like this. Send it up to me, the package, and I'll take a look. And then you have to, and then you have an in, and they'll read it, and you write on the outside of the envelope requested materials. And so you then won't go in a slush pile because your odds are really low. If you just are, even if it's edited, you have to get the attention for somebody to read it. And when they read it, they'll often
right,
read
that's
it
where first. The query letter comes in, of course, and you have to have a really good query letter to get grab
you
somebody's
to.
Attention, you know.
And they'll often read the first paragraph and say, next.
Yeah, they do that in screenwriting, too. And oftentimes, and I'm sure that traditional publishing is that way, they're sometimes just looking for an excuse to say no. Because there's so much there, and they find the first paragraph. It's just so difficult to get over that first hurdle of somebody reading it and all that type of thing. But I agree, and I certainly would encourage our listeners that have a book in them and want to write a book, that having a professional editor like Margaret Harrell to sort of you know, help you along the way could open up a few doors for you, possibly. At least it won't hurt. At least you'll have a very polished manuscript when you get there. Now, you talk about, you know, the skilled writer or somebody that's just coming out trying to be a writer, and you're saying, what should they do first? Get a ghostwriter, a co-author, a book coach, or, as you suggested, an editing coach, which I almost think, listening to this today and getting a clearer sense, that could be first and foremost. That could be as valuable as just a regular book coach, writer coach, you know, that type of thing.
Yeah. So a book coach, well, yeah, unless you're talking about the post-writing part of the book coach when they're helping you get it published, a writing coach, a book coach, that's what I try to be. Because part of the pleasure of writing is to feel proud of your own production. It's about creativity. And so you have to feel something, you created something and it came out of you, but you need to be coached. So that's the very best outcome, where you incubate a lot and you create out of your own self. But somebody on the other side is giving you feedback at the proper moments, because you don't want feedback some of the time. You want to be sweated out on your own, but giving you feedback at the proper moments and suggestions and encouragement. So there is a facet of being a book coach in the way I would say be an editor. Until you get down to the copy editing part, the minimal copy editing part where it's just grammar and stuff, then it's not a book coach. But before that, it is. And some people need to have this editing help all the way through from the beginning, and they benefit from it. Some people wait till they're down to the copy editing and they really feel they went to a book club and they passed it around and they went through many, many, many rounds of revision based on that. Maybe all they need is the last stages of but they still will need the copy editing part and maybe the proofreading.
And they can contact Margaret Harrell to get the proofreading and the editing done, and that would be just terrific on that.
I love doing it.
I know you do. And you can tell, you can hear the enthusiasm all the way through from meditating to editing, which is, you know, completely different mental functions, I would imagine. What was your favorite job, just being an editor?
Besides saying that I basically make sure I can work with an author before I take the job, a book job, because it's no point in your working with someone who isn't interested in what you say or, you know, whatever. So first of all, because I make sure I can work, I do a little test first. And because of that, I basically say I love every job I do. But some of the ones I love the most are the ones where I saw something really, really improve, you know? Like, for instance, going way back, of course, the Hunter Thompson one was fascinating. There was another one, but I could come up to the present and find ones too, right now today. But another one that was completely unusual and fascinating was that Random was way back at Random House. They sent me out to a man's law offices, and he was a fascinating man. He had a whole law office, you know, several people, several lawyers in New York, and they were high profile. He argued First Amendment cases before the Supreme Court. So they sent me there because he had written a book on his cases that broke the obscenity, the First Amendment defined what was obscenity and what was literature. Uh-huh. Because things like D.H. Lawrence, whom we study in school, Lady Chatterley's Lover, that was considered obscene in those days, and it would be confiscated in the post office until he had his case for Grove Press. So he was a very, very good writer. He was competitive with his first cousin, Norman Mailer, in writing, and he was skilled in writing cases for the Supreme Court. But what he didn't have was a book, because he had chapters, and they were written separately. So one chapter would introduce a topic, and then he would define it and so on as a standalone piece. But like six chapters later, he would introduce it again, et cetera. So you had to like I had like a mental cross reference system for all the things that he introduced in one place. But as a book, he needed to delete lots of other places, et cetera. So that was really fun because we sat there side by side the whole book process. And that, like I did with my Keep This Quiet editor, it's the only time I actually sat every single minute beside the author. So that was fun. But I love to see, like, there's somebody today, not very long ago, she had a successful book, self-published. And she first brought me a manuscript, and so I said, well, send me 50 pages, let me see what shape I think it's in, what I think it's ready for, what level of editing, and we'll go from there. And I can give a flat price based on that. She sent it in, and I took a look, and I said, oh, it's not ready for me. And so I told her I would be wasting her time because I'd be doing what she should be doing.
Sure.
I told her what it needed, and in this way I saved her a lot of money, but I saved her the fact that she would be writing her own book, and it would be different from if I tried to work on it in that format. So I said, no, it's not ready for me. I gave her a few little clues, and I said, if you want more in-depth analysis, we can have a little half-hour consult, and I'll go into depth into what I think you need to do. She wanted it. She went away. She came back. She did everything, and it was a beautiful turnaround she made, and then it was ready for copy editing, and then minor line editing. So that kind of thing makes me feel wonderful because everybody's happy.
Sure, absolutely. Well, it's been wonderful, Margaret, talking with you again. I always love our conversations because you have so much to talk about because you have so much experience. So next time we'll talk about some of your travels and experiences at the Carl Jung Institute in Switzerland. It could be kind of extraordinary. And then maybe pick up some more on the meditation as well. I want to tell our listeners, too, that are interested in learning more about meditation with Margaret Harrell to you can go to your website as well, margaretharrell.com, and you can find Margaret's profile page on ariel.com and the special offer we have for 15-minute meditations with Margaret at a very inexpensive price. And those of you that need an editor, a really good editor, and want to learn more about what an editor does and what can do for you, then you also need to go to margaretharrell.com and also find out about some of her editing on the Ariel profile page of Margaret Harrell. Thank you, Margaret. It's been
a
pleasure.
Thank you, Victoria. Oh, my pleasure. It's so interesting talking to you. I love it.
Tune in next time, as there's always something new to learn on Ariel's Talk Time with Victoria Lynn Weston. If you're a professional psychic, astrologer, or life coach, and you're looking to gain more recognition, expand your brand, or to be listed with an exceptional group of inspiring professionals, join Ariel. Visit ariel.com.